driving you home every weekday afternoon. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Tony Juniper worked for Friends of the Earth for 20 years, leading their campaigns to conserve resources and protect the environment. He also stood for Parliament as the Green Party candidate in Cambridge at the last general election. He came into 105 a few days ago, where he spoke to Simon Burton.
Tony, you spent very many years working with Friends of the Earth, didn't you? The environment's become a passion for you in life, hasn't it?
It has, really, yes. I've been involved with different bits of work to look after the environment, going back now 30 years, starting with a project with primary school children, trying to get them outside and interacting with wildlife. That was back in the 80s. From there, moved to BirdLife International here in Cambridge, where I spent quite a lot of time trying to stop various rare species of parrot from going extinct, and then moved to Friends of the Earth in 1990, where I spent 18 years working on different questions: rainforests, protection of wildlife in the UK, climate change, resources, water. Finished up as director there for 6 years and left in 2008. And since then, I've been doing a whole variety of different projects, working with the university here as a fellow with the Sustainability Leadership Institute in the University of Cambridge, and working with Prince Charles's sustainability team, amongst writing books as well.
You've written a very interesting book, which I've been reading, called What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? What was the reason for writing that book, and what's it about?
Well, the thing about that is, you know, just reflecting back on those 30 years when I've been involved very actively in all of this, and you know, you realise that people are not against nature and people don't hate wildlife, and yet it still is being destroyed, and you think to yourself, well, why is that? And the conclusion I reached is because we've fallen into this misconception whereby we see economic development as a choice against looking after nature. And when we look at it through that prism of either or, we generally go for the economic development benefit. And I thought, if we don't break that side of the misconception, we're not going to be able to conserve this wonder of nature that's all around us. And so I wrote a book basically saying why that is a completely wrong-headed thing to do. It's just not right. And the opposite is, in fact, the case, because without nature, we don't have an economy. It's kind of fundamental. Governments legislate and spend money and tax us. And if you look at all of that, then you can realise there's some really pretty irrational things going on. And, you know, one of the things that I've been researching lately is looking at farm budgets in the UK. And over the next 5 years, we're going to spend about £15 billion incentivising farmers to do different things. And in some cases, that's going to make other things worse, including flood risk, because of the soil leaving the fields and finishing up in the bottom of rivers. The rivers spill over the top, and then we have to pay a lot of money to clean up that mess. And so it's just not rational from the point of view of how governments are commanding these big budgets and incentivising different actors to do things.
Do you think we've reached a watershed in history over the environment globally now? And it's something that governments will absolutely have to deal with in a very serious way.
Well, I certainly do believe that, in the sense of the loss of biodiversity and the wildlife species that are disappearing now more quickly than for millions of years. We have the climate change challenge with build-up of CO2 in the atmosphere and other greenhouse gases. And then we have depletion of different resources like fish and soils and fresh water. And if you roll all of that together, this is not a good situation for the future of humankind if we don't do something about all of that. The good news, of course, is that all the solutions are there. And this book really is about that. It's the story of what can be done if only we can scale it up and get the right mindset to do what's needed.
To give some examples of the way nature basically affects us in a massive way, economically as well as ecologically, you give a couple of examples of bees as being absolutely yes. pivotal in the ecosphere, and then also vultures as examples of how that works. Can you describe that?
Well, when it comes to bees, obviously one of the things they do apart from making honey is pollinate plants, and many of the plants they pollinate happen to be crops, which are feeding us, and something like two-thirds of the world's crop plant species are pollinated by insects, mostly bees. If you take the bees away, you have a big impact on food security. And one example I came across in my research, which I think sums it up, is a part of southwestern China where in the 80s they used very heavy pesticide applications to control pests in fruit orchards for apples and pears. That worked. They killed the pests, but they also killed the pollinators. And so ever since then, if you go back to that part of the world in the spring, you'll see the fruit farmers climbing in the trees with feather dusters, moving the pollen between the blossoms by hand because the bees are no longer doing it. And then when you see that kind of thing, then you can start to appreciate some of the figures that are coming from the environmental economists, who estimate that bees are adding something like £190 billion worth of value to the global economy every year. A vast sum of money. And yet we destroy their habitats, we poison them, we damage the ecosystems that they rely on. And that is a major threat to economic welfare. It's not an environmental problem per se, it's one about feeding people.
Prince Charles wrote the preface to your book. What's his role what's your role in what he does, and what's his role in what you do?
Well, he's been involved in all of these environmental issues for getting on for 40 years, actually for more than 40 years now. His first speeches back on this go back to when he was a young man. And, you know, he's worked on climate change, on agriculture, on pollution, on the conservation of peat bogs, rare birds, fishing and everything else. And after I left Friends of the Earth, he said, well, would you like to come and help with my rainforests project as an advisor? So I did do that, and I've been there now helping for 6 years, and we've widened the agenda onto fisheries and food security and various questions linked to climate change and health, amongst other things. And so my role there really is to help a little bit in working out what the right things are to do. And really the thing that he does, which is an exceptionally important thing, is he brings people together. So he doesn't campaign, he doesn't advocate, he doesn't tell people what to think, but he does bring people together who hopefully between them can work out a solution. So for example, on fishing, the fishermen, the retailers who sell the fish, the governments who regulate the fishing, you bring them together with the non-governmental groups, the campaigners like Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace, and you can get solutions that you couldn't get otherwise. So that's really what he's doing.
Now, that's working with nature. You've also taken quite an interest in your book in technology for nature, like, for instance, the Cambridge University World Eco Challenge solar car.
Yes.
Tell me about that. Have you been off to see Ken O'Mariogi and the team? Because solar power and energy-saving technologies are very important here in Cambridge, isn't
they
it?
And
that's also described in your book.
Exactly. So the point about all of that really is the inspiration we can get from nature to help technology develop. And there's many examples. That solar-powered car is one. I mean, it looks like a leaf. It's mimicking basically the kind of surface that a plant would develop to harness the sun's energy. There's plenty of other examples there. One I wrote about is the snake in South Australia that can harness very weak sunshine to warm its body up. And the researchers looking at that think it could be a clue in what that snake is doing to help us develop better solar capture technologies for heating homes and offices and what have you. And then another example is the boxfish, which the Chrysler Motor Corporation used to invent a new car body design, which is much lighter and much stronger than the previous design they had, invented first by a fish.
Man needs to evolve using his technology, using nature and not against it. That's basically the message, isn't it?
That's basically the point. It's not to say that nature does better than technology. It's about using technology in a way which looks after the nature. Because in the end, the nature is what sustains us. And, you know, without natural systems, we're nowhere. The oxygen we're breathing, that's being produced by plankton in the ocean. The food we're eating is being produced by soil microbes and bees. The water we drink is being replenished by aquifers and forests and other ecosystems that purify it. If you destroy nature, you basically destroy the basis of human welfare. And it's unbelievable that we still have this debate in politics and among big companies where we say we have to strike a balance between looking after nature and economic development. No, we have to protect nature, otherwise there is no economy. It's a different message.
Now we're here to talk about an event with the Friends of the Roman Road and Fleam Dyke, which is a local environmental group. Can you tell me a little bit about what they do and your involvement with them?
Well, they're trying to protect and conserve a couple of features in the countryside in Cambridge, which you know are both ancient monuments and which, because they've not been ploughed for a very long time, have a very strong diversity of wild plants and insects on them, amongst other things. And to that extent, you know, are quite unique features, because Cambridgeshire is one of those bits of England that has really been intensified in terms of its agricultural methods over recent centuries, to the point now where we don't have much left. We've got a few places like Wickham Fen and Woodwalton Fen, a few little woods like Hayley Wood, and a few little bits of grassland like these two ancient features. So I'm very much looking forward to coming along and hopefully sharing a few of the ideas that are in the book with people coming to the meeting.
Now that's you're giving a talk called Nature Conservation conservation, it's the economy stupid, and that's being given at the Cambridge Masonic Hall next Saturday between 6 and 9 p.m. I look forward very much to hearing your talk. There's also going to be Amanda Hall with her guitar, who's going to give songs for a summer evening at the event. If you're at all interested in conservation or hearing about these issues or global warming or everything going on in the environment, this is a do that people really should be going to. So that's on Saturday the 28th of June at 6 p.m. at the Cambridge Masonic Hall in Bateman Street.
And if you want a ticket to come to that event on the 28th, you can send an email to Elfrida Heath, Elfrida.Heath, Heath, at ntlworld.com.
Tony, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
For coming in.
Look forward to seeing everybody next Saturday.
Thank you.
Simon Burton speaking to the environmentalist Tony Juniper.